No matter what our admiration may be for Israeli, the American people have a big heart for all refugees. Israeli, surrounded by an Arab world, is endangered by the Arab refugee camp. And we must realize that the Arab states are presently overpopulated in relation to their tillable soil. The American people, I think, will support loans at the International Bank from the Arab states to empty the concentration camps. Even the most emotional pro-Zionists should welcome the removal of this sore spot in the Middle East. And even Professor Salim may be converted to optimism. On more basic levels, I suggest two explorations. One, the pattern of communist infiltration in the Middle East is now clear. To use the people of the Middle East as cannon fodder for communist dictatorship. The free nations of the world must support a dramatic program to build up the capital equipment of the Middle East for irrigation and industry. We must also offer the odd genius of our own American know-how. Our support of such a program would not only aid our defense endeavors, but would also be to the economic advantage of the American worker. We must learn that the problem of the United States is not what we can sell to other nations. Remember, we can only sell to the extent that we are willing to buy. Two, the Middle East is the cradle of the human race. For obvious but invalid reasons, the American people look on the Middle East only as an ancient civilization. But it is also, I assure you, very young. Although the Egyptian tombs date back 5,000 years, the Middle East contains great natural resources, and above all, a people now experiencing an exciting awakening of their great new future. Egypt, for example, is at the entrance of its second renaissance, and the Middle East, if treated without political pressures, can bring quick results, since this area, the front door of Russia, suffering none of the disruptions of war, may hold by united action the key to world peace.
Thank you, Morris Ernst. Now, if we may continue this orderly discussion of this highly volatile question, gentlemen, will you step up around the microphone? We start with Lord Wilmot. Lord Wilmot?
Well, Mr. Denny, I think I've got one or two points to answer. Why is the British Army in Egypt? It's there because under the treaty, which is as recent as 1936, we are obliged to assist in the defense of Egypt, and we are obliged to maintain the independence of the Sudan. Now, it's true that the Egyptian government recently started to negotiate for a change in that treaty, and we were willing to do so. And as a gesture, our army moved right out of Egypt, except the canal zone. But we're under obligations to the League of Nations, to the United Nations, and to our allies to maintain the defense of the canal against communist aggression until we are satisfied, and others are satisfied, that we can be relieved of that obligation. Now, we would have gone right out of the whole canal zone as well if we could have come to an agreement with the Egyptian government which safeguarded the rights of the Sudanese. And I say to Professor, we must insist that the people of Sudan, who have trusted us, have a right to determine their own future.
Thank you, Lord Wilmot. Professor Salim?
I notice that Britain has a great weakness for contracting treaties with very small nations and for hanging on to those treaties like grim death. It all reminds me of a great Englishman, Shakespeare, about a certain contract made by a certain Shylock. I don't like this idea of the sanctity of treaties when it's enforced by the strong against the weak. And it brings a great deal of trouble. We are seeing it now in Iran. Iran is up against a treaty signed in 33 for some 70, 80 years, and she's up against it. You can do nothing about it. And if you hang on, you are asking for trouble. Everybody in Egypt, from this man street to the peasant to the prime minister, is against this treaty. What earthly use is it to Britain or to anybody else when one side doesn't want it. It's no use hanging on, because you lose a friend. I ask Britain, I advise Britain, that it's very short time for her to keep a friendship of Egypt and of the Arab world.
Thank you. Mr. Ernst?
Being a lawyer, I'm not going to be technical and talk out about treaties. It's important, it seems to me, that the Suez Canal be defended. It must be defended by a strong military force because of the communist-Russian situation. I would suggest that in time the United Nations should have the army to protect the Suez Canal.
I should say Egypt should have the army.
Has anyone got an objection that Egypt should have to defend her own territory? Why, you nurse, why do you keep Egypt weak? Keep her away from her own territory to defend it. Why should Turkey have the right, the pleasure, and the honor of defending her territory, and foreign troops must defend Egypt and not the Egyptians themselves?
Well, Lord Wilmot.
Well, the fact is, we've all got an interest in the defense of the Suez Canal.
Egypt's interest is biggest of all.
Well, we've got to be satisfied that Egypt will perform, and will perform better, if I may say so, than she did against Hitler. We are very conscious of the fact that we, the Americans and ourselves, kept Hitler out of Egypt. And when Egypt steps out and performs her obligations to the League of Nations in Korea, we shall be prepared to believe in their ability to defend the canal.
I just want to pose to the American public before they make up their minds. Would we be willing to have the United Nations forces defend the Panama Canal? I, for my part, would.
And I. Professor Salim?
I must point out the patronizing way in which Lord Wilmot referred to Egypt. He is obviously hasn't got the spirit of the United Nations, which treats all sovereign states as equal. Egypt is little. She doesn't count. Beware of those small nations that you imagine don't count. It's they who will tip the balance in the end against you. It's they who have got time to save the situation and not act too late, as you are doing now with Iran.
Do you want to raise any new question, Professor Salim?
I'd like to ask Lord Wilmot, has he heard of General MacArthur's views about foreign occupation, which definitely state that a foreign occupation lasting 5 years is an evil thing? What does he think of an occupation of Egypt lasting 70 years and is still going strong?
Lord Wilmot?
Well, as I explained, this treaty is under negotiation now. And we are willing to withdraw the entire British force from Egypt and the canal zone on two conditions: that the safety of the canal is guaranteed and that the rights of the Sudan people to choose their own destiny is honored.
Thank you. Anything further? All right, we can take some questions from the audience. Oh, here's a gentleman with a question right now. Yes, sir. Would you give him a microphone, please? Quickly, we came unexpectedly.
My name is Al-Abid Buhafa, Egyptian correspondent for Al-Misri. My question is Lord Wilmot.
Yes?
I would like to ask Lord Wilmot, how would he reconcile the compliance with an outmoded, dusty treaty with Britain's obligation toward the United Nations and with Britain's membership to the Atlantic Pact? And if Lord Wilmot will not understand my question, I will elaborate on that.
I'd be glad if you would, because I don't quite understand.
Sir, Britain's weakness and impossibility to safeguard herself were justified by the United States' interest and formation of the Atlantic Pact. Sir, Britain has considered, as any other nations, that her safeguard of her sovereignty will be better protected by her membership in the United Nations. Now, sir, how could you reconcile those two facts with Britain coming to the Egypt and say, you need us for your own protection?
Well, so far as we're concerned, we are quite willing that the United Nations should settle this problem, and we are prepared to abide by third-party judgment.
But, sir, are you aware of the collective... Protective Measures Committee, which was called nominally by Dean Acheson Plan, whereby all nations are supposed to pull all their forces together for their collective security.
No, the fact is that the Egyptian question has been before various committees of the UN for some time, but they've not found a solution yet. I wish they would.
Thank you. I see a question from a distinguished guest we have in the audience who participated on our program when we were in Israel. Dr. Carl Herman Voss, chairman of the Executive Council of the American Christian Palestine Committee, who's just come back from the Middle East.
My question, Mr. Denny, is addressed to Selim Bey. As a determined opponent of communist expansionism, would you comment on Egypt's abstention on two different occasions on the UN votes taken for an economic embargo against Red China?
Certainly.
Selim Bey?
Egypt's attitude about the Korean affair is perfectly clear. It is nothing but a protest of a country that feels itself hardly done by, a victim of aggression, that will not take part in helping others to get out of aggression when she needs somebody to help her out of it herself. It's silly to go and put the fire out of somebody else, your neighbor's house, when your own house is still on fire.
Thank you very much, Professor Selim. Now, in just a moment, we'll continue our discussion in a moment after we hear from our announcer.
While you catch your breath, let us remind you that your town meeting will continue throughout the entire summer to bring you lively and stimulating programs, and that most of our originations will be from other cities outside New York. Next week, for instance, we'll be the guests at the University of Denver, Denver, Colorado, in connection with their Citizens Conference on Government Management. The following week, we'll be in Memphis as guests of Goldsmith's Department Store as a salute to the opening of the new $5 million plant of Plow Incorporated. At this time, Senator Estes Kefauver will be one of the speakers. On July 3rd, we'll be at Jacksonville State College, Anniston, Alabama. If you would like to have town meeting originate in your city this summer, and you represent local educational or civic organizations, write to Mr. William Traum, Business Manager, Town Meeting, Town Hall, New York, 18, New York. That's William Traum, Town Meeting, Town Hall, New York, 18, New York. We will rejoin America's Town Meeting immediately after station identification.
This is WENR and WENR-FM, your ABC stations in Chicago.
I will continue our question period with the gentleman here.
Question from Leon Kemage, correspondent of Journal d'Egypte, addressed to Mr. Ernst. Don't you think that the Arab states have already made the greatest possible contribution to peace in the Middle East concerning the conflict with Israel by accepting the principle of partition?
I don't want to get into the Israeli-British problem. But let me say this. Number one, I think that wherever Great Britain has been, the people of that section of the world are better off than where she wasn't. Now, I'm not saying that England did a perfect job any more than we did. As far as the Israeli situation goes, it's my best judgment that nobody was perfect and that everybody who was a party to it was in error. And this is a must that we now live up to and don't look at the past. What do you do with the 700,000 Arabs? You're going to let them die their lives out in those camps. As long as that happens, Israeli is in peril.
I think that you didn't quite get my question, Mr. Ernst. I was speaking about the stand of the Arab states. You just said that everybody must make a concession around on the basis of a round-the-table conference. But I think that the greatest contribution has already been made by the Arab states by accepting the partition principle. I mean, that's the basic fundamental question. And the rest must come afterwards by other people, too.
Well, I don't live my life on the basis of who makes concessions when I'm looking for a decent world. I think the Arab position has been a wise one in many respects. But it seems to me there is no solution to the Israeli problem until you come to grips with what happens today and not re-debate the concessions of past years.